Okay, we left off yesterday at the bottom of Pei Bet with the machlokas about how far apart trees have to be in order to be considered a cluster or a field of trees. We had Rav Yosef's opinion, which was that it has to be between 4 and 8 amot. And then we had Rav Nachman's opinion, both of them quoting in the name of Shmuel. Rav Nachman's opinion was that it's from 8 until 16 amot in order to be a steilan. So Abaye suggests to Rav Yosef that you shouldn't argue on Rav Nachman, because we have a Mishnah that supports the position of Rav Nachman, and that was the Mishnah by Kerim that supports Rav Nachman. And then we had a case, the Mishnah also has a case in Salmon, that seemed to indicate the fact that 16 Amot is the number or the right distance in order to be classified as no longer being a single entity or single field, and less than 60 amot would seem to be yes, which would be support, would be in support of Rav Nachman. Rav Yosef replied, and he says, "I don't know," meaning that I don't agree with that Mishnah, but rather I know the Maaseh or something that happened in Uvda in Dura Deruta. And in Dura Deruta, the trees were placed apart either 4 amot or 8 amot, depending on which interpretation. The Rashi reads it that they were 4 amot apart. Tosfos reads that they were, brings a sheet that they were possibly 8 amot apart because they were apart more kemelei bakar, right? And the kelav, the amount of melei bakar bakalav, which is either 4 to 8 amot, and that was in support or similar to the position of Rav Yosef. So now the Gemara continues. It's on the top of Pei Gimel, 2, 4, 6, 7 lines down. Marzez, Rav Yosef, Milotnan. I mean that the reason that Abaye says that we should follow the position of Rav Nachman is because we have a Mishnah that supports the position of Rav Nachman. But the Gemara says, wait a minute, we have a Mishnah that explicitly supports the position of Rav Yosef. What's that? Rav Meir v'Rabbi Shimon omrim, Hanoteya et karmo shmona amot al shmona mutar lavi zera l'sham. Someone who plants his vineyard 8 amot with 8 amot between the rows, then in between those rows, you can bring in tevuah, you can bring in grains. Why? Because the distance, again, to be classified as a vineyard, you need two vines on each side plus a fifth one, or at least, right, you need 2 rows of vines that have a total of 5 vines, and they have to be within proximity to each other. They'll be classified as a single vineyard. So over here, the Mishnah, or according to Rav Meir, Rabbi Shimon, the definition of what's classified as a vineyard is, right, 8 amot. If it's more than 8 amot, then they're classified as single vines. Because they're classified as single vines, then they can plant in between those vines. Because once you have a shame of vineyard, then you have to separate out, right, they about the kerem away from it in order that it doesn't kill it. If you have a single vine, all you have to distance is sheer unika, the amount that it takes to not be so close, 3 tefachim or so, that it doesn't yonik, it doesn't draw from the same area in the field. So over here we see 8 amot as the classification or the line above which it's classified no longer as a vineyard. So that would be in support of Rav Yosef. So why is Abaye saying, listen, you got to go like Rav Nachman, we have a Mishnah like Rav Nachman, we have a Mishnah like Rav Yosef also. It's a safe, exactly. It's the safe of that Mishnah. Right, exactly. Rabbi Yehuda brings the Reisha, and then they bring Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon as the Seifa. Right, so there was selective disclosure here. And, right, Abaye is only bringing the Reisha of the Mishnah. So Gemara says, Afilu achi ma'ase adif. The answer is that, ma'ase adif, that you have 2 positions in the Mishnah. You have the position of Rabbi Yehuda, you have the position of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon. But Rabbi Yehuda's position also comes along with this story. And that story, it tells about a Ma'ase Rav, right, it talks about a story with the Psak Halacha, and therefore the Ma'ase Adif, there we say that gives more tokif to it, because we have a story, the Halacha, that gives more tokif to that position. So now, the Gemara says, Bishlam, other Rabbi Yosef, Aliba, the Rabbi Shimon, Shmin, and Lei, Mufuzarim, Bishmani, and Lei, Ritzufim. So when it comes to the position of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef's position is at 4 to 8 amot. So there's a minimum of 4 amot. If you're below 4 amot, then it's omid li'aker, and it's no longer classified as a vineyard, or even with the trees, it won't be classified as a steilan. If it's greater than 8 amot, then it's too much, too far apart, and it'll be singular trees and not a steilan. So now, Gemara says we have a Mishnah supporting both of those situations. Why? Mifuzarim hadamran. How far apart they can be, we know from this Mishnah that we just quoted, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon, but we quoted at 8 amot. right, is the maximum amount, or is the amount, once you hit 8 amot, they're considered as independent entities, they're not one field or one vineyard. Ve'ritzufim, how do we know that 4 amot is the minimum? Ditznan, kerem anatua pachot mitalad amot, you have a kerem that is planted with less than 4 amot between each of the rows of the vines, or the vines. Ain't no kerem, divrei Rabbi Shimon, it's not a kerem. It's not a vineyard anymore. Why? Because those vines are omid li'aker, right? Those vines are going to be pulled out. If they're going to be pulled out anyway, then they're not classified as being a row or vine, or vineyard anymore.
I'm taking granted that what's not considered a vineyard is what's not considered a state of mind.
Right, right. That's the assumption here. Chachamim Arim, kerem, v'rim, etayim, tzim, kilo, einam. No. Say, for instance, you have 3 rows. Each of the 3 rows is 2.5 amot apart. Right? So according to Rabbi Shimon, that's not a vineyard because it's omid li'aker. The other Chachamim say no. We're talking about that middle row, the row in the middle is omid li'aker. So we view it as ki'ilu ne'akar. It was as if it was pulled out already. And then we view the 2 outer rows as forming a vineyard in that case. Now, the Rashi says that this is a chumrah, that normally we wouldn't say gehol omid li'aker ki'aker dami, but it's a chumrah because this is kilayim, and kilayim is doraisa, and has a, right, isra no associated with it. Therefore, the chumrah or machmir in this case, the view it as a ki'ilu ne'akar. But nevertheless, you see here, the 2 positions of Rabbi Yosef, 4 amot and 8 amot, are explicit in Rabbi Shimon's opinion in the Mishnah. Rav Nachman, alibi the Rabbanon, Rav Nachman, who is using the position of the Rabbanon, or the case of the, or the ratio of that Mishnah, Mifuzarim Shemayin, and like, we heard about the case of how far apart they can be, to mean not classified as a state line anymore, that we saw 16 amot. That was the Mishnah we brought at the bottom of, Pei Bet, right, Ritzufim, Mishmayin, and like, we never hear the minimum amount that they have to be. How close could they be? We don't have that minimum. So we don't know what the Chachamim say. All we know the Chachamim say is that Omei Le'akir Dami. We don't know about what distance they're talking about. Tanna Kamma mentioned 4 amot. Rabbi Shimon mentioned 4 amot. Are they agreeing to Rabbi Shimon's position that 4 amot is the number? And they just say, we disagree with your position that Omei Le'akir is not viewed as a kur. Or are they saying we disagree completely with you, Rabbi Shimon? First of all, it's 8 amot. And number 2 is that's unclear. So Gemara says, that you're right. We have no Mishnah to support the position of the Chachamim, but there is a logical argument. The Rabbi Shimon Paga, the Rabbanan Ami Paga. From Rabbi Shimon, we know that his position runs at the maximum at 8 amot, and his minimum is 4 amot. 4 amot is half of 8 amot. So if the Chachamim's position is that the maximum is 16 amot, their minimum position should be half of 16 amot, which would be 8 amot. So based on that logic, we say, okay, that's 8 to 16. But, Amar Rava, Hilchasa, Mi'arba Amot, at Sheisre. No. The way he says, no, Rabbi Abba says, no. The Chachamim's position is from 4 to 16. What we have explicitly, when they are explicit about the 16, where they argue on Rabbi Shimon, that's where they argue. Where they don't argue on Rabbi Shimon means they agree to Rabbi Shimon's position. So you have a position that's 4 to 16 amot, not 8 to 16 amot. And that's where Rabbi passed on halacha, that it goes 4 until 16, which is the halacha. Right, Tanya Kavasi de Rabbi, we have Bryce that supports that position. Kama Yehu Mikuravim, how close can they be? Arba amot, becoming Yomruchakim, Sheshusrei. Right, so that is the minimums and maximums you see are clear, explicit, is 4 to 16 amot. All right, so if it's there, is it kind of karka v'etinok shebneihem? Right, so there.
What is that
person?
Is that
person
about a
term? No, talking about ilanot here. So if a person is kind of the karka, right, when he has less than 16 amot, then he's kind of the karka there, v'etinok shebneihem, and the other trees that are in between them, I mean, these are the small trees that are not included. Fikach yavesha ilan o niktzatz. If the tree dries up or is cut down, yishlo karka. He has land, meaning on which to replant it there. Pachot mikan o yeter akan. If it's less than 4 amot or more than 60 amot, oshlo chan b'zerach zer. Or he bought them sequentially. Harizel lo kana lo et akarka v'lo et alilanot. You don't get the land and you don't get the trees on it. I mean, the trees, not the actual trees that you bought, but the trees that are dispersed in between the other trees, the smaller ones that are dispersed in between. Shibinahem. By the other trees, right? If this tree dries up or is cut down, ain lo karka. You have no karka because, right, you didn't buy the 3 trees within a context of a stay ilan. So it's not a stay ilan, you're not entitled to the karka. If you're not entitled to the karka, then all you are entitled to simply are the trees that you bought and nothing more than that amount.
So the Rashi is saying that if you bought 3 trees that are spaced out a certain amount, that they sort of demark the boundary of what you brought. As you were saying, you brought trees that are between them all.
But they're only small trees. It's not regular trees. It'd have to be trees that would be batel gabei akarka. If you have full-fledged trees in between, then the answer is no, meaning that you wouldn't get those trees included in there. So it has to be, it depends whether it would be batel de gabei akarka or not batel de gabei akarka. All right. Now the Rashbam points out here, just as a quick note, that he says that kamei mikuravim, the Rashbam says that nearby now Yehuda din the magdishi lanot. That the way the Gemara here is laying out, this is a din in mekach umemkar, in transactions, this would be the case. He says the same din would apply by hekdesh. If you're magdishi lanot, the determination of what you were magdish would be determined by the exact same parameters that are over here. And he says that this braisa, therefore, would argue on the braisa that we saw earlier in Amukher Tabayit, which is that hekdesh mimata asara lebeitza'ah, which is 10 trees to a beitza'ah. Because 10 trees to a beitza'ah will not conform to this 4 to 16 amot distance, because it won't conform to it. He says that these two braitot actually argue, and that there are actually two different positions about how far they have to be in order to be classified as a stay ilan. The other thing to point out is that even when we say, in the cases where we say that you're allowed to plant, for instance, not classified as a vineyard, therefore you're allowed to plant in between the rows of the vines, nevertheless you're not allowed to plant in between the vines themselves.
I mean,
it would have to go three on each side, but there, even there, the chamir or machmir, that even though they're sheer yunika, say, for instance, you have a row of vines that are not classified as a karen, they will not allow you to plant in between those vines because it just looks
between
the rows you can plant, but not between the vines of the single row, even though they're not a karen, even though it's not a vineyard, because it's just too. It looks bad. It doesn't. It looks too much like a you're planting together kelim. Yeah, it's a dindur abanon, but even though technically it's not a vineyard, you still have this idea that you shouldn't plant those areas. All right. By Rabbi Yirmiya has a question. Shumot date, right? Where does he? When you're measuring how far apart the trees are measured, mimakum katzar umodet or mimakum rachav umodet? Are you modet from the narrow area of the tree or the thick area of the tree? Now, one position, right, which the Rashi brings down, which he says he doesn't think is right, is that do you measure from the trunk, right, which is the thick area, or do you measure from the branches, which are the narrow area, I mean the place where they already narrow out? The other possibility in which the Rashbam favors here is that where along the trunk do you measure? Do you measure from the base of the trunk where it's very thick? Or do you measure from the upper part of the trunk where it's much more narrow? I mean that when you're measuring these distances between the trees, what is the right demarcation? What would we consider the middle in order to measure from tree to tree? So, Amalei, Rav Gviya, Mibay Katil, the Rav Ashi, Tashma, we have a mission, the Tanan, right, we have a mission. Here it's Machlokes, the Rashbam and Tosfot, how to read this. Harkova Shibagefen. Harkova, so the Rashbam reads Harkova, or really there in the mission it's Harkova. Right, so there he mentions, the Rashbam reads the mission Harkova as Markivin, Gefen Zakein. That it's grafting. These are vines that have been grafted, where you take, right, the younger vines and you take them onto a base of a older vine. I mean that these are grafted Gefanim. Enomodet el Mikara Sheni. Then you only measure from the second, here the Rashbam calls it Pekaka Sheni, from the second knot of the tree. But he says that the Ikar, or the first Pekak, right, is wider. Then you have a middle Pekak and a third Pekak. You have these three knots that go along the vine. They don't measure from the first one, which is thicker, not from the top one, which is very narrow, but rather from the middle Pekak. The Pekak Sheni is classified as the middle of the knot, and therefore the same would do you the true red trees. You would measure it from the middle of the trunk. You would measure from the base, which is very thick, not from the top of the trunk, which is narrow, but you measure from the middle area of the trunk. That's the way the Rashbam reads this Mishnah and the proof from this Mishnah. Tosus, on the other hand, says, what are you talking about? Harkova, right, is never used to mean, right, markivin, or grafting, but rather, it's from the word, right, harkova, or berech, which is the knee. And that is used in other places. We're going to see again a Mishnah in a couple of minutes, that berech means from hamavrich, one who takes a shoot of a vine and then replants it, meaning that they take that, while it's still attached to the vine, they submerge it into the ground and take it out in another location. It's called a berech, because it's like a knee, that you bent it down and you take it out on the other side. So Tosfos reads this harkova to mean that a vine who has a shoot that's been drawn under the ground and pulled out in another location.
What's so over there. From the location, are they separate then from the
They don't, over here it's not severed yet. They don't necessarily sever it. So that's the question. The question is, where do you measure from? Do you measure from the original Geffen, or do you measure from this, you know, it's one of its children, we'll call it, offshoots, right? Do you measure from those offshoots? So that's the question of, that's the question of Rabbi Yirmiyah, and then the Braisa brings down, that, so he says, the Kamar, the conclusion from this Mishnah is, the Ein Modedim, the Inyan Kilayim, Elam Ikar Hasheni. You measure it from the second, or the offshoot. So based on that, Tosfos' conclusion is what? That you look at the most expansive view of what goes through the tree. So over here by a vine, you look at, not only do you look at the core vine, you look at the offshoot, so the, you measure from that extended area. So too by the tree. You're asking me about the tree, whether you measure from the narrow part of the tree or the wide part of the tree, so too you'd measure from the widest part of the tree or from the base of the trunk. Because just like by a vine, we look at the most expansive view, so too by the tree, we'll look at the most expansive view of the tree, being rochav, meaning the base of the tree. So depending on how you read the Mishnah, whether it's a markivin or a kovar berech, will make a difference on how you view the conclusion of the Gemara here, or the answer to Rabbi Yirmiyah's question. Now, Rabbi Yirmiyah has another question. But Rabbi Yirmiyah, machalo shlosha badeilan mahu. So if he sells three badeilan, what's the din? So now, he has actually three trees. Now all of these three trees are actually, truthfully, one tree. One tree that has offshoots over here, but there's dirt that's piled up on top of these branches or offshoots that come out of the tree. So it's Echad Shehu Shalosh. Right? Meaning that it was one tree, but it has three divisions here. Those three divisions now, between them, as they've been covered over by dirt, and now they look like three separate trees, even though technically they are one tree. So now, Zomer Leir of Gvia, Mibay Katil Ravashi, Tashma, Tatanam, we have another Mishnah, Mavrich. So it's clear what this is. Mavrich is these offshoots that are submerged in the ground and take them out in other places. Mavrich, Gimel Gafanim, V'Ikrehem, Nir In. Right, so you go ahead and you submerge these three trees, and then Ikrehem, Nir In, and their original, right, the original piece is still intact, and Hishrishu, they've taken root. I mean that they're still attached to the Ikar, but they've also rooted in their location. What's the din over here? So he says, if they go from 4 to 8, they qualify to be a vineyard over here. If not, they're not mitzdarif. So here you have, if you take three gifanim, what's the minimum amount of gifanim, minimum amount of vines to be classified as a kerem? You need five. So here, obviously, if you're doing mavrich, you need three as the minimum, you'll end up with six. So if you take three gefanim, three vines, and each one of them you're mavrich, right? You submerge and take out another location, and they were rooted in the new location, even though they're still drawing their sustenance, they're both drawing their sustenance from the same location because they are still attached, right? Nevertheless, Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzedek says they're classified as six gefanim. If there's six gefanim, now you can have a kerem. He says they do qualify as a kerem over here. So the same thing will be true by Badei Ilan. If you have one Ilan that has the shoots, or the offshoots are now submerged, and they look like three, nevertheless, they'll be classified as a stay Ilan, because they are now three, they've rooted, each one of the new areas have rooted. Because they've rooted, now they're classified as separate trees, even though, again, they're unique from the same base or the same root system.
So, thinking yesterday, there was a question that Gemara had.
Right? But that's after the fact. So here it's before the fact. He's selling the three trees when they already look like three trees. Yesterday's daf was where he sold them as one tree, and now later on it's going to turn into a three. Claim that it was three trees. There it's not the case, because the question is at the time of the transaction whether he gets karka or not. Over there there's nothing to talk about. He didn't get karka at the time of the transaction. Then he's going to come back and make it look like, or it's going to look like
that's
he made karka.
That's the point. Right. They're considered separate trees.
Right.
Before that.
Right, that point, then it's not. And if later on it happens, it doesn't help you. Because
it doesn't help you. It was in terms of whether he gets the karka between them or not.
Right. Or no, he'll claim that he originally got the karka. That was the problem there. Not that he does, but he claimed that he'll do it. Right now, Bari Rav Papa. Machalo shnayim betoch sadeu v'chad al ha-meitzar. Takes two trees in his field and one tree on the border. So now, one on the border, is that already classified as a separate entity? Meaning that when you talk about stay in line, you're talking about trees in the middle of a field. Talk about a tree on the border, that's not really a tree that's part of the field, and therefore maybe it's considered a separate entity, right? What's the din? Mao. Then he says, the way the Rashbam reads it now, it's imtim saloman. Im Tim Salomar, that when it's on the border, it's still classified as part of a Estei Ilan, then Shnayim Betoch Shlo, Ve'echad Betoch Shlo Chaveiro. You have two trees in your field, and one in your a friend's field. Does that now classify for you for three trees to become a Estei Ilan? So Gemara says, my, well, in that case, again, Teku. This is a Teku. Now, the Gemara is going to continue with the questions, and the questions, the Rashbam again reads these as Im Tim Salomar. He has two trees in his own property, and then he buys the third tree in his friend's property. So now, do we consider them to be three trees, three adjacent trees, or do we consider them to be separate trees over here?
So, how many trees does he buy?
He has two in Ilanot. He has two ilanot on the edge of his field.
He's only buying one tree.
Right. He has one more tree that he bought in his friend's field. Right. Does he get karka along with that ilan? That one ilan, when he buys it, is it mitzarif to the other two trees to classify it as a stay ilan? Right. He has to buy them together. Right. So here it may be different, because over here he already owns, which is the difference there. Over there, when you're buying it from a different person, when you bought it zeh hazeh, when you bought it sequentially, you never had karka with the first two trees, so therefore we say no karka with the third tree, because you bought it sequentially. Over here, the first two trees have karka because they're in his property. So the question is now, when you buy that third tree, does it form a stei ilan, because those other two trees are on the border. If trees on the border are classified as part of a stei ilan, now can he extend the stei ilan by buying the third tree? All right, by Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi asks, now, but again, the Rashbam, it's interesting, the Rashbam reads this as an intim salomar. That he reads it in intim salomar, even though the Gemara just concluded with the teiku. Usually when you read it in intim salomar, you would say, oh, then you have a teiku at the end. Nevertheless, the Rashbam reads this as a continuation. He says, by Rav Ashi, bor, ma'u shetafsik. Says, now, if you want to suggest over here that the previous cases, it might be that this is the reason there's a teiku in between, is because the previous cases are a separate issue of karka. Now, we want to talk about hefsek. Over there, maybe the reason that they're mitzarif these trees is because there's no physical barrier between them. There is a border, there's a gvul, but that gvul is an invisible border, which is just that it's an ownership difference. But there's no physical barrier between the trees. Now, Rav Ashi is asking, what happens if there's a bor in between the trees? There's a physical barrier between these trees. Ma'u she tafsik, right? What
is somewhat of a physical separation?
Right here, the Gemara is assuming there was no physical separation. It's just simply that was a katzei sadeu. So now, what is ma'u tafsik? So then, what's the din? Now, if you want to say bor is not a hefsek, then amatamayim mahu. What about an amatamayim shetafsik? Well, what's the difference? Bor is submerged in the ground. The water's below the ground. It's not visible, the water. So maybe there it's not mafsik. Amatamayim, which is right up the surface of the ground, and the water's up there, maybe that would be mafsik. And the Gemara says, again, this would be an imtim salomar, reshut rabim mahu. What would be the din of a reshut rabim? Reshut rabim over here, right, is that much more extensive? The Rashbam over here says what's Rishut Rabim is Midal Aramot Tetzayim Belo Tetzayim Bechlal Ma'ushet Tafsik. You're not literally Rishut Rabim until it says the same thing. It's not Dafka 16 Amot. We don't need 16 Amot. The question is, do you have maybe even a Shvila Rabim? Do you have a passage of it? It's too far apart, right? So that's why it's obviously not talking about that. But Rishut Rabim, we're not about here, is that a path that Rabim access, which is 4 to 16 Amot over here, is that considered a hefsek? And again, Imtim Salomar, that isn't a hefsek. What about Richva de Dikle? What about, this is the greatest one, is the Kalim that have been grafted over here, which are considered, we saw before in the Mishnah, right, at the end of a Mokhar Tabayit, that they're like a stevish pnei atzmo. They have like such a high status that even Rabbi Elazar agrees is that they're sold with the field. So therefore, these entities are so important and so significant that they're distinct, maybe they should be separated. So again, all of these we leave as a teiku. All of these are enumerated as a teiku. Ba'i minei Hillel, mi Rebbe, right? Hillel asks from Rebbe, Allah eretz b'neihem, a cedar tree appears, grows between them, meaning that after you purchase these three trees and you have the karka, a cedar tree appears between them. Mao, what's the din? So he says back to him, Allah b'shut adidei. No, fuck, right? What do you mean? He says, it grew in his own field. What do you mean? If you own the karka, whatever grows on the karka is yours. So what's the question here? So he says, no. Elhaya erez b'neihem mahu. If there was an erez in between them to start with, meaning that when you went to buy the stei ilan, there was a cedar that sat between those three trees that you bought. What's the din? Armalei kana kana. That the erez comes along with them, and that's what we said before, that et ailanot shebeneihem. the trees that sit between them, you get. I mean, you get the stay land plus all the trees that sit between them. As long as the tree is not so significant, right, that it becomes a separate entity, then it will go along with the sale. So he says over here that the erez is not significant enough, and therefore kana v'kana. In that case, he is kone, the erez that's in between them. Right.
The erez doesn't seem like it fits under the ketan.
Right.
Although it's also not...
A fruit-bearing tree. That might be the significance of it.
Maybe a fruit-bearing tree...
Overwhelms, right. It has to be that it's less significant than the trees around them, so that it would be... Batel, the gabay, the steilan that you've purchased. All right. Ketzad hein omdim. All right, so how do they stand? So what do you mean, how do they stand? I mean, that when you're talking about steilan, what's the distribution of these three trees? So Rabba Mark Yeshuvah, they're in a row. That's how it does. And you get the property that's in between them. Shmuel Mark Yechatzuvah. So it's like a tripod. They're like three distributed as a tripod, and that's what we're talking about, Steilan. Manda Mark Yeshuvah, Koshkin Yechatzuvah. One who says that they're in a row, you get the property, and certainly when they're distributed like a tripod, you'd get them, because they're obviously more like a Steilan as a tripod than as a Shura. Manda Yechatzuvah, right, the one who says that they're a tripod, but Shura lo. Maita, Amo Meshum, Dizdara, Bein Tayu. Why is it not classified? Because you can plant in between them. Right? You don't affect, you're not really encroaching on the trees by planting in between them. Right? Mati Flarav Amnuno, the Manda Markhatsuva, my time alone is Dara Bintayu. Right? So what's the reason for the one who says Khatsuva doesn't right is tripod is? Why? Because Lomiz Dara Bintayu, you don't plant in between them. Right? So Elamiato, Zavin Le Tat Hige Rumaita. Lomiz Dara Bintayu. If you sell him, if he sells you three, these are like thorn bushes. Right, three thorn bushes that you can't plant in between them. All of a sudden, you'd also get karka. But yet the idea, or the premise, or the principle on which we are basing the fact that you get karka is that when you own three trees or you have a state line, the other party won't plant in between those trees. So if you have three in a row, they will plant in between them because there's no real interference over here of the trees. But if you have them like a tripod, it's almost like it's demarcated a certain area, and the owner will not go in and plant, the owner who owned the property around it will not go in and plant to that middle area because of the trees that surround it. So because it's like almost like a locked off or marked off area. That's the case if the principle or the issue is simply that you can't access or people will not plant right in that area, then the same should be true of thorn bushes. You buy three thorn bushes that are distributed as a tripod. Nobody will go into the area in between because they'll get injured by the stung by the thorns, right? So if that's the case, right, instead of three thorn bushes, you should get the karka in between, which seems like a ridiculous because they're not a steilan, right? They're insignificant thorn bushes. How could it be that would be the case? So he says, there are actually two qualifications. In order to get karka, you have to have something that is chashuv. The ilan that's there has to have significance. I mean, it has to be a chashuv ilan, or something that is significant, of significance. And number two is they have to be distributed like a tripod so that they won't plant in between. It's actually two qualifications, right? A thorn bush is only qualified on one mark, that you don't plant in between them, but they're not significant in and of themselves. But... right, so therefore you will not get karka. To get karka, you need two. You need to have significance, plus you can't put a plant in between them. Right. So now, next Mishnah. Right, the next Mishnah is it's a great Mishnah, it's an interesting Mishnah, only because it rekindles a machlokus between Rashi and the Tosfot that we had back in Perek HaZahav. It's like a little chazara of Perek HaZahav, and I know everybody missed it, we've been away from it for so long. So here we go back to the dinim of Onah. And here we have a machlokas Rashi from Tosfos that is similar to the machlokas of Rashi and Tosafot that we had in Perek HaZahav, which is Amocha Rosh Beima Gasa Lo Machar Et HaRegleim. Someone who sells the head of a right large animal, Lo Machar Et HaRegleim, the legs don't go along with it. Machar Et HaRegleim, Lo Machar Et HaRosh. They're considered separate. They're significant in of zems and they're separate. Machar Et HaKane, Lo Machar Et HaKaved. You sell the lungs. You didn't sell the kaved, the liver. Now here, over here, we're talking about the lungs. We're talking about the whole area, Beit Revi, the lave, the heart. You know, all that, all those that are attached are in that area. And if you sell the kaved, the liver, lo macharta kaneh. You didn't sell the kaneh. Abal b'daka. We're talking about a small domesticated animal. We're talking about smaller animals. Then macharta rosh, macharta raglaim. Then the legs go with the head. Macharta raglaim, lo macharta rosh. Again, but the other way around, the legs do not take the rosh with them. I mean, the rosh is considered the significant one, and therefore the raglaim go with it. Macharta kaneh, macharta kaved. If you sell the lungs, the heart, then the liver goes along with it. Macharta kaved, you sell the liver, lo macharta kaneh. Right? So, the mission so far is pretty straightforward. Now, the next. Arba midot v'machrim. We have four different qualifications in, here it's really in transactions. But that the one, that there are three, the four categories are, one where the seller can renege on the deal, one where the lokeach, the buyer, can renege on the deal, one where both parties can renege on the deal, and then one where neither party can renege on the deal. And that's what they're going to enumerate here. Machar lo chitim yafot v'nimtza'in v'nimtza'u ra'ot. He sells them, or offers him, good quality wheat. In the end, he finds out he got bad quality wheat. Then, lokeach yichol lachzor bo. The buyer can reverse or back out of the position, right? But the mucher can't back out of the position. Ra'ot, if he offers to sell him low-quality wheat, v'nimtza'u yafot, in the end they turn out to be good-quality wheat. Right? So then, a mucher yechol lachzor bo. The seller can reverse his position over here, because he was the one that was nitaneh. Right? Ra'ot, v'nimtza'u ra'ot, yafot, v'nimtza'u yafot. If he offers to sell him bad, and he gives him bad, he offers to sell him good quality, and he gets good quality. Then neither of them can reverse their positions over here. Neither of them can renege on the deal because they got what they bought. They got what they bargained for. Shichamtit nimtzeot levana. If they are the way Rashi reads it, the dashchum is a would have been like a brownish, but it's red. He says over here maybe it's a ruddy color, some mix between red and brown, and ends up he gets white. Levana nimtzeot shichamtit. On the other hand, he offers some white and he gives them this reddish. Itzim shel zayit v'nimtzu shel shikma. Offers him wood, olive wood. He ends up giving him sycamore wood. Shel shikma, it says sycamore. Nimtzu shel zayit becomes gives him olive wood. Yain v'nimtzu chometz, sells him wine. It turns out to be vinegar. Nechometz v'nimtzu yain, or it turns out to be wine. Shnehem yochalim lachzor ben. In this case, both of them go by because there is a mekach taut over here. It's a clear problem with what was sold. So now, what's the question? And this is what raises the problem for the Rashbam and the Tosfot that they're addressing over here. Is that we know from the conclusion, the Gemara in Perka Zahav, what is the din by Ona'ah? The din of Ona'ah, we passed them like Rova. We had a Mishnah, and we had Rabbi Natan, and we had Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, that had opinions there. In the end, the Gemara concludes that Rova, the Loch is like Rova. What's a Loch like Rova by Ona'ah? Pachot Mishtut, right? The Mecher is Kayam, and there's nothing to talk about. Shtut, when it comes to a sixth, if you overcharge by a sixth, what's the din? The din is that the mechar is kayam, and you machzir et onah, you return the onah. If it's above a sixth, then it's mekach batel. The mechar is batel, and we'll discuss in Tosfos, it's an interesting idea that he raised also back in the Gemara and Perek Zav. So now, who is our Mishnah like? If Rambam is passing the locha like, right, in that manner, our Mishnah is not like Rova over here. Our Mishnah says, whoever mishanit aneh, whoever became, right, who was cheated, or whoever was on the one who got the raw end of the deal over here, he's the one who has the right to reverse the position, but not the other party. Now, Rova's position was simply that it has nothing to do with which party was offended over here, it has to do with the amount, right, of the offense. Based on the amount of the offense, doesn't matter, mocher or lokeach, that will determine the outcome of the case. Over here, our Mishnah is almost a throwback, right, to the position which was mentioned in the Gemara there, which the position is at Mishnat Mishnat Ane Yado Ala Yelna. Whoever was cheated is the one, or whoever was overcharged, or you know, underpaid or overcharged, is the one who gets to determine, gets to call the shots from here. So how do you reconcile between Rova and this price over here? So there are two possibilities. One is that, right, one is that they do agree, and they have to figure out some way to reconcile, and that's Tosfos' position. Or you can suggest over here that they are different. Right, there's a difference between the case over here and the case back in Perek Zav, which is what the Rashbam does. So if you look in the Rashbam, Machar lo chitim yafot. Right, so this is, listen to this, Machar lo chitim yafot. It's three lines down the widest lines in the Rashbam, three lines down the widest lines. Hidno lo limkor chitim yafot v'nimtzeo yaraot. He said he made a condition, right, that he was going to sell them good quality wheat, and he sold them bad ones in the end. Ein ze mekach ta'ut. So already you know the Rashi said, that's not a mechach ta'ut. Shichlu shneim lachzor, that everybody could back out of the position here. Shechitim itnolo limkor, v'chitim achru. Because the base, the underlying item which he suggested he would sell to him, he does sell over here, which is wheat. He offered to sell wheat, and he sells wheat. Mechach ta'ut, as you see from the end of the Mishnah, is a case where the object is nothing like, right, what he offered to sell. I mean, it's a totally different object. Therefore, that's classified as a mechach ta'ut. There, both parties can back out. Over here, it's not a mechach ta'ut, because he gave them the underlying object, it's just a question of degree, quality here. So now it says, "Ve'im shum darot ninu." So now you're going to say, "Okay, the quality was poor versus with the good quality that he promised him." In zuela ona'a. This is not classified as a mekaftos. That is ona'a. Kago ona'a tishtut. Right, so he says, the buyer can go back. He had it here. Right, he can't. The seller can't back out here because he wasn't overeating. He's the one who benefited from the whole deal over here. Even though after that point in time, see, for instance, the price of wheat skyrockets. So now, in the end, he gave him ra'ot, and because of that, he undercharged him for ra'ot. Now, Tosus explains this Gemara over here. Now, like the Rashbam seems to be that he gave him good quality and bad quality the same quantity. Tosus suggested over here that he gave him not the same quantity, but the value. He gave him more of lower quality in order to get to the right value over here. It says, v'tznan b'zav. And we have a Mishnah in Perek HaZav that says, mishu tu'al alav una'a yadol al yona. Right, he can say, reverse the transaction, or give me back the excess that you charged. He has the right to make the choice. That is the Mishnah in Perek HaZav, but that is not with Rav Paskin in Perek HaZav. So how do we reconcile? There is no Mishnah over here. The Pasuk Rav HaZav. Rav was explicit in HaZav. Shtut kana u'machzir ona. That if it's a sixth, he gets his money back. He can't say back out of the transaction. So, v'hai mishnah mukila rova k'Rav Yehuda Nasi. And that mishnah, Perek HaZav, Rava says, is the opinion of Rav Yehuda Nasi, who I don't hold like. V'yusfer like Rabbi Natan. And Rava says, I hold like Rabbi Natan. Afilu hachi. This is unbelievable. The Rashbam says that despite the fact that that mishnah in Perek HaZav is Rav Yehuda Nasi, and Rava says, I hold like Rabbi Natan. We have a Tahani Kavase de Rava, and we bring down a position of Rabbi Natan over there. So we think that Rabbi Natan is the position that Rava holds like. Unless now we have a Brisa that Mishnah's explicit like Rabbi Yehuda Nasi over here. So how do you reconcile that? So Rava will say, no problem. Everybody agrees that you can back out of it. Shahare hit ahu. So this is a very interesting rationale. Because you tricked him. Now he says it's not a mekachtot, but ona. But it's not ona like the ona of Perek HaZav, because he told you cheated him. So there's some sort of category which lies between ona and mekachtot. Which is mekachtot is something where the in transaction falls apart for both parties, and that's the end of our Mishnah here. There's a ona, which is psak of Rava. Ona is you only have one choice. The choice is either, right, if it's less than a sixth, no choice. If it's a sixth, you return the money and the excess charge and the transaction stands. Above a sixth, you can reverse the transaction. That's it. And both parties are equal in this, you know, in this position.
The Rav is qualifying our Mishnah here as being ona or not being ona?
He's saying our Mishnah is ona, but it's ona that's in between, not the ona that Rav addressed, and not mekachtos that's addressed by the end of our Mishnah, but something in ona that's in between those two. So they're asking because Jaito Vloya Datoli Kachrot. He didn't intend to buy low quality stuff. But Gabe on Achtut, Shikanama Shrotelik note, you bought like a usage, oh, he bought exactly what he wanted, but like a shumtaot, there's no mistake here. El Mechirat Yoker, the problem is the price. Hotam, right over there, Machzir Ona. So basically you're gonna have three categories according to the Rashbam. You have a category on Ona, which is where you get the object you paid for, but somebody the price is wrong. The price is wrong, that's Ona, that's governed by Rova's halacha, that's over there. Then we have a different all the way on the alternative, which is like you were suggesting, if I bought wheat and you gave me barley, that's a mekachto the gamre, and there you can reverse it, that's the end of our mission over here. Then there's a third category which we didn't know about, which is a case where you got the object you wanted, but it was of a different quality. The person misled you about the object itself. Not about the price, but about the object. So even though you got what you were asked for, but you got a different classification or a different class of what you asked for. In that case, that would be governed by the Mishnah in Perek HaZav, or our Mishnah over here, which was Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's opinion that even Rav agrees over there, Mishnah Netaneh, whoever was the one who was misled, is the one who has the right to reverse over here. That's the answer of the Rashbam. Tosus over here says exactly what he says in the Gemara in Perek HaZav, which is that Rava does not hold like Rabbi Natan. Over there, there's a Brisa that follows the position of Rava, and there's a Machlokas Rashi in Tosfot. When you say that Brisa, who's that Brisa like? It says Tani Kavaste, and then we bring a position from Rabbi Natan. The question is, when we bring that Brisa that says Rabbi Natan, does that mean that Rava holds like Rabbi Natan? Or are we simply bringing the Brisa, which is Rabbi Dino Tam's position over there, to show, right, that something like Rabba's position, but not that Rabba holds Rabbi Natan, Rabba still holds Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. That means that, according to Rava, you have two options in every case. That's what Tosafot suggests. That's what Rabbeinu Tam suggests in Perek Zav, and he suggests it over here again. And he says, that's how Rava can fit into this Mishnah. Anytime, so let's take, for instance, a case where you're overcharged by a sixth. Where you're overcharged by a sixth, according to the Rashbam, and the way Rashi read it in Perek Zav, you only have one choice. What is the choice when you're overcharged by a sixth? You can ask for the excess back. If you ask for excess back, and this transaction stands. There's no way to reverse the transaction stands, and you get the excess back. The Rabbeinu Tam says, no. Rava's position is a derivative of Yehuda Nasi, meaning that the Mishnah in the Perek Zav and our Mishnah over here, which means that when you're overcharged by a sixth, you have two choices. One choice is, right, Mishin Nitaneh Yado Ala Yona. You can ask for the transaction to be dissolved. You can ask for the transaction to be reversed. Or, like Rava, which is Rava is just an extension of that, or you can ask for the excess back and keep the transaction. That means that in every point along the way in Rava's position, you have Rava's position plus Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, which is Mishnataneh Yado Al Yona, plus you have the position of Rava over here. So that's it's an unbelievable statement. That's what the Rabbeinu Tam believes here when it comes to Una'ah. When it comes to Una'ah, he holds like Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Mishnataneh Yado Al Yona, plus you have Rava's position.
He can cancel transaction or he can ask for
his money back, the excess money back. The excess money back, correct. That's the way we're on time. Now, the benefit of learning like Tosos is the next line in the Gemara, which is now, how do you deal with Rav Chisda? I'm Rav Chisda, machalo shaveh chamesh b'sheish. Someone will sell something that's worth 5 for 6, but who garv, amad al shmona, and later on it goes up to be worth 8. Mi nitaneh, right, lokeach. Who was the one who was cheated originally? The buyer. In that he bought something that was really worth 5, and he got charged 6. This is according to Shmuel, right? We had the Machlokes Rav and Shmuel in the Gemara and Perek Zav. Again, this is all Chazara here, about how do you calculate the 6th? Is the 6th based on the merchandise, or the mamon, or the ma'ot? Shmuel says, ap bekesef, that it works with both. So over here, since it's 1/6, when you look at relationship to the price, therefore it'll be considered as a shtut. So who was mit nitaneh po? The lokeach, the buyer. Lokeach yechol achzor bo velo mocher. Okay, I can reverse his position, right? Velo mocher, not the buyer over here. Mishom d'amalei, ilu lo otnina and lo avamatzit hadart b'cha. Basically, the seller says to him, "Listen, now it's worth 8." So he says, "Listen, you had the transaction is not final. Why is the transaction not final? Because the buyer has the ability to reverse the transaction over here because he was cheated. He had a greater ona'ah over here since he had an ona'ah that was a 6th." Therefore, he has a right to back out of the transaction. It means the transaction is not final until he makes his decision to stay with the transaction. So now all of a sudden the price shot up and it's worth 8. So the seller says, listen, now I'm out. I'm the one being cheated because I sold it to you. The transaction is not complete until you decide that, right, you're keeping this transaction or you're getting your money back. So since it's not complete, now I'm the one being cheated. So I should be able to reverse the transaction. So he says, no, you can't do that. Why? Because he can say to him, listen, the buyer says the only reason you would have even a right to reverse here is because you cheated me. So what now? Chote niskar? Because you tried to cheat me, now all of a sudden you're going to get new rights in the transaction? No, that doesn't work. Now all of a sudden that you are now, right, that you can't go back on it. But Tani Tuno, we have our Mishnah. So that's the case. Now, who does Rav Chisda hold like? Who does Rav Chisda hold like? So for Tosfos, it's easy to explain. Rav Chisda is Rava. Rav Chisda is still Rava, because Rava holds the Yehuda Nasi, and therefore you have a choice. When it comes to a 6th, either you can ask for your money back, or the excess money back, or you can ask for the transaction to be dissolved. So Rav Chisda is like Rava. He's quoting our Mishnah. It's the case here, this gray case in between. Right? But whereas the Rashbam runs into a problem. The Rashbam still has to say Rav Chisda holds like who? Rav Chisda holds like Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. He's like Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Has nothing to do with our Mishnah because here it's a case of 5 and 6. It's all about money. Here it's a case where it's not about you got the right merchandise, but it was a different quality or a different class. Here you got the wrong. You overcharging. Simply money overcharging. According to the Rashbam, Rava does not agree to the position of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in this case. So therefore, according to the Rashbam, Rav Chisda is holding like Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and not like Rava. That's fine because there are Moraim that are disagreeing. Right over here, so the Mishnah is a different case, and that's why Rava is reconciled with Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, but Rav Chisda is not reconciled. So there'll be a difference here between Tosfos and Rashbam about Rav Chisda's position. Is Rav Chisda like Rava, or is Rav Chisda like Rabbi Yehuda Nasi? And that will depend on how you reconcile our Mishnah with Rabbi Rava and the Gemara back there. Now the last thing to point out over here is Tosfos. Tosfos brings an interesting case here. What happens in a case where it's more than a 6th? In a case where it's more than a 6th, the buyer has a right to dissolve the transaction. So now, Tosus in Perkaz Av says something, and he repeats that over here, which is that when it's above a sixth, it's a mekach taut legamre. That means that both parties can reverse it. It's so egregious. It's so not a sale, because nobody would purchase at this price. Therefore, both, even the mocher, even the seller, can back out. So the reason the Gemara gave an example here of exactly 1/6 is because when it came above a sixth, Even everyone agrees. Even Rav Chista would agree that the mocher, that the seller has a right to reverse it. Both parties have the right to reverse it because it's basically a mekach ta'ut. Tosa says it here. Tosa says the same thing in Perek HaZahav. Now, there he brings down here, that doesn't bring in Perek HaZahav, the Rivam. The Rivam says yes, that's not the case. The case is, what? That the only person who has a right when it's above a 6-2 ask for his money back is the buyer. The buyer is the only one who can, he's the only one who can be back to the mekach. That means if the buyer decides he wants to keep the transaction, and even though he was overcharged by more than a sixth, he has a right to keep the transaction, and the mocher can't stop him. The only way the mocher gets a right to access or to stop the transaction is if the lokeach comes to him and says, you overcharged me by more than a sixth, there's onah here. He says, listen, I don't want to nullify the transaction, I want my overcharged amount back. I want the more than a sixth, the amount above a sixth that you charged me, I want that amount back, or I want you to be mafzir the onah. I want you to return all the amount. So if he opens up the possibility then and saying, I want the transaction to stand, but I want my Noah back, once he does that, then the seller gets the right to also reverse here. He says, no, listen, that's not the case. Once it's that high, I have a right to be Mevatel, the Mekach too, and it goes. So Rivam enters a new idea that above a sixth is not Mekach Batel, like Tosa says everywhere else. That means that both parties have the right. Like Mekach Taos, the last case is in our mission. Either party can go and reverse it, but rather, right, the case over here is that it's a Mekach Taos that the buyer has the right to reverse, but once the buyer asks for his money back, meaning he says he wants the transaction, he wants his money back, then the mocher has opened the opportunity to classify it as a mekach ta'ut. Okay, we'll stop over here.